This competition would pass from a stage of peaceful competition, peaceful rivalry, to one of international conflict. It would also lead to economic crises, depressions, and so on, which would cause domestic turmoil and then prompt these capitalist states into adventures in the foreign realm. These crises, Marx argued, were not cyclical. They were not random. They were inevitable. The result of what he called fundamental contradictions in the capitalist system. To interpret these crises, to interpret the operation of capitalism and indeed all economic life, all human life on this planet, Marx invoked Hegel's notion of the dialectic. That is, one began with thesis. The thesis was challenged by its antithesis. Out of the conflict of thesis and antithesis would then come synthesis. That synthesis would then become the new thesis, challenged by a new antithesis, a new synthesis, and so on. This dialectic, Hegel had seen, was the dialectic that drove human history forward. Hegel had emphasized that it was ideas that drove the dialectic forward, but was the dynamic for all change in human history. Marx and Engels took Hegel, as Marx said, and turned him on his head. They insisted that it was not ideas, but rather economic relations that drove the historical process. Dialectical materialism was the formulation that they used. Specifically, the relations of production were the key. And all else, the state, ideology, religion, and culture, ideas were nothing more than the reflection of these relations. They were the superstructure. The real hidden structure was economic production and the modes of production. So that political ideologies, legitimate monarchy or liberalism, all of these were simply ideological covers used by the dominant classes of any particular period to cover their own particular narrow interests. These ideologies, these attitudes, values, and so on, which would tend to dominate a culture at a particular time, were in fact nothing more than superstructure and means that used to cover these economic interests. Each class developed an ideology or a value system that suited its own needs and then tried to give that ideology a universal application. Liberals talking about the rights of man, speaking in universal terms, when in fact, Marx would argue, what they were really talking about was narrow bourgeois interests. He pointed to the bourgeoisie in France as a great case in point, that their attack on feudalism, stated in these grandiose terms of the rights of man and the citizen and so on, were nothing more than a reflection of their own class interests. It had nothing to do with the natural rights of man. And just as the contradictions of the old feudal system, the inherent contradictions there, led to its downfall, so too would capitalist contradictions lead to its own collapse. Unrestrained capitalism would lead to greater and greater concentration of capital. The proletarianization of small producers would then follow. What Marx was arguing was that capital would be concentrated increasingly in a smaller and smaller number of people, that there would be what he called proletarianization, that the sort of middle class would simply fall away. They would become part of the proletariat. There would be a greater and greater alienation of workers, increasingly alienated from their work in this factory system. And there would be greater and greater international tension. In a situation of greater international tension, then, these domestic troubles, alienation of the workers, their growing exploitation, proletarianization, would lead to revolution and finally to war. And it would be this combination of war and revolution which would ultimately bring about the final collapse of this wicked, corrupt capitalist system.